Ladies and gentlemen, Sunday morning football scoop podcast. I'm your host, Scott Roussel. I've got college football experts, John Bryce, Zach Barnett. Gentlemen, it is great to see you. We are live. We survived week 12. I thought the meanest thing I've ever seen is Texas A&M giving life hope to South Carolina before just saying, Wait, we knew we'd be 30. We got you. Mike Elko, son. That was quite a day for the Elko family, right? Here's $66 million. First half. Ah. Any thoughts from Texas A&M Aggieville, gentlemen?
I mean, it just showed you what talent can do. It showed you that I think it showed you what talent can do. It showed you that nothing overly catastrophic happened as bad as that first half was. They didn't lose a player that could dictate whether or not they were able to come back. They just played really lousy football. They should have been down at the half, but they should have probably been down at the half 30-20, not 30-3. And there was a lot of time left, and the college game moves a lot slower than the pro game. So we've seen some wacky fourth quarters in the NFL this year. Broncos Cowboys comes to mind, but nothing like that, just because 30 minutes in the college game is an awfully, awfully long time. So, and A&M was the better team, the more talented team. It probably should have won 38-30 the way things shook out instead of 31-30. But the better team won. A&M keeps alive what I've been saying, and that is if they went out, they'll be no worse than the number two seed, and they'll have a big fat bye, and they'll have a whole lot of time. But Marcel Reed kind of is Marcel Reed, and he's a little erratic, and he can be turnover prone. And A&M now is really good enough around him to overcome those types of performances for Marcel Reed.
Yeah, after what I saw yesterday, I don't think Texas A&M is the SEC's best team. I've detailed how fortunate their draw has been in the SEC schedule, but all they can do is beat the teams in front of them, and they found ways to do that every single week. I think I happened to be listening to the South Carolina radio broadcast for the end of the first half, and those guys were just laughing at how fortunate they'd been. They talked about how they're talking about how fortunate they were at the end of last season, and they haven't got those same breaks this season, and now it was their turn to get those breaks, and they got them until they didn't. And I heard Shane Beamer say that, you know, we weren't surprised because we went on a 24-0 run against these guys in the second half last season. And apparently he said the same thing on TV and hyped up the fans on the way out. And I guess at that point they were, 54-3 over four quarters against the Aggies, and until it wasn't. So Shane Beamer's a very polarizing personality in college football. I think it's safe to say that. And I think it's also safe to say he brings it on himself.
There's no doubt about it. South Carolina 1-7 in the SEC. Their one wins over Kentucky early on. Shane's not going to get doesn't seem like he's going to get Virginia Tech. Is Shane going to be the head coach of South Carolina next season?
He is, but here's what I would note is that I think he's not getting Virginia Tech because he's stubbornly dug in on fixing South Carolina. I don't think he's not getting Virginia Tech because he's not had access to get Virginia Tech. Quite the opposite. Even with the struggles of this year, I think Virginia Tech would welcome him with open arms, especially if those open arms happen to include a Lenore Seller coming with him to play quarterback. Like, I trust the people I've talked to at length over the last several weeks about that. But I think he'll be at South Carolina next year. You guys know my philosophy. You reset your clock a year too soon, because if you wait a year too long, you might not ever control the reset button again. When you look at South Carolina's schedule the next 4 years, good on Shane's stubbornness. I'm a big believer in stubbornness. Good on being that competitive. He's going to have a hard time being in control of his clock the next 4 years at South Carolina, the next 1 year at South Carolina.
Well, Virginia Tech's made it very clear James Franklin is their choice if he'll come to the table. They're trying to get him to come to the table, and who knows, it could get done today. or it could fall apart today. So maybe it's too early to say the chain won't get Virginia Tech, but he's clearly not their first choice. We'll see. Jeremiah Donati is new at South Carolina. He's looking at this team saying, so, you know, John, you said if he can bring a quarterback with him, some other guys were thinking that quarterback might be somewhere else next season.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
One last thing on that game, and John, you brought this up, but it wasn't just so much that A&M went on a 28-0 second half run. It's the speed at which they did it. It wasn't like they hit a touchdown pass like at Notre Dame and as time expired. They took the lead with nearly 11 minutes to go in the game. There was no scoring after that.
And just sat
and A&M should have scored another touchdown and fumbled the ball away. But South Carolina's offense was just completely non-existent after halftime.
I think I tweeted this out. They erased after the half, they erased a 30-3 deficit in 15 minutes and 39 seconds of game time. 15:39 of game time is all that it took them to erase a 30-3 deficit.
Let's talk about some other top 25 games. Some that were close, some that really were blowouts. Let's start with Alabama, Oklahoma. Zach, give me some quick thoughts on that's a huge win for OU. Bama, they're probably still in. I don't know. Give me thoughts.
Yeah, I think it's more beneficial for Oklahoma than it is damaging for Alabama. I kind of compared Oklahoma, like, you weren't going to be upset or declare the season a failure if you went to Tuscaloosa and lost this game. It'd be a bit like being a 14-point underdog in a game and giving up the game-winning touchdown. Like, you're bummed, but you're not pissed. But Oklahoma managed to hold on to that proverbial lead. It was one of the strangest games. I saw Bill Connolly for ESPN put out the post-game win expectancy of 4.6% for Oklahoma. Because of how dramatically they were outgained in the total yardage, or was it like, should have it 440 something to 200, something like that. But of course, a lot of that was Oklahoma's own doing. You have a 48-yard punt return that eliminates the opportunity for your offense to gain 48 yards. You have a pick six. Obviously, you're not going to gain any yards on that. Oklahoma had four scoring drives on their offense that gained a total of 117 yards. They also had a strip sack deep in Alabama territory. They had scoring drives of 23, 31, 41, and 22 yards. So this defense, it looks like a Brent Venables defense. They are killers on that side of the ball. And their fatal flaw early in the season was they weren't forcing turnovers. Now those turnovers are coming, and they've been enough to carry the offense to wins at Tennessee and Oklahoma. And John Mateer, Tennessee and Alabama, excuse me. John Mateer, he's one of the most damnedest quarterbacks I've ever seen, because the guy has moxie. He's a winner. But in wins at Alabama and Tennessee, he's 34 of 52 for 297 yards, no touchdowns, one interception. Those are entirely pedestrian passing numbers, but he's 2-0 in those venues.
You just said Brent Venables' defense looked like they're world beaters. And then you go back to the Ole Miss game.
Yeah. And they got shredded.
Yeah.
It turns out they just needed to leave Norman. Who knows? I mean, but this team, you've got two home games against two compromised teams, and you're in Missouri at LSU to close the year, and you're in the playoff. And if you get everyone back, the 2026 Oklahoma team will probably be better than this team.
If, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I mean, certainly with a long history between Missouri and Oklahoma, Missouri played really well in its win against Mississippi State yesterday. Missouri and Drink would love nothing more than to have a chance to upend those Sooner playoff hopes. Otherwise, Oklahoma does control its destiny. Finished 10-2, have wins against Alabama and Tennessee on the road. An earlier win against South Carolina before the Gamecocks were roadkill doesn't hurt. You're in. You're absolutely in. As for Alabama, look, the Tide still really control their own destiny. They've got Eastern Illinois. That's a money win. And then they've got Auburn in the Iron Bowl, which I believe is at Auburn this year. We'll see. I mean, that one is. We've seen lesser Auburn teams rise up and scare Alabama. But then we start talking about SEC tiebreakers, and I'll admit I don't know them, but Alabama's only going to have one loss in league play if it handles business, and then A&M it would be the presumptive other one. Georgia's sitting there also as well, but Alabama owns the head-to-head. I don't know what it all means, but Alabama, that was a damaging loss for Alabama yesterday, but it was not a condemning loss for Alabama yesterday.
Do we see Kalen DeBoer retire, or at least give the Black Hoodie of Death a break after he finally lost in it?
You shouldn't need to wear it against Eastern Illinois, and then you reevaluate. maybe you come up with the new Houndstooth Hoodie of Death for Auburn.
Who knows? You mentioned Missouri. I got, like, watching Ahmad Hardy, that dude is just, wow. Man, is he fun to watch. Runs hard. Runs away from people. My goodness.
They're nice on the D-line, too. I like Missouri's D-line. Like, they've got some.
Oh, their defense was, defense was legit yesterday. All right. Ole Miss was in a battle with Florida back and forth until they salted it away at the end. Will Lane Kiffin be the head coach of the Ole Miss Rebels next season? It's a loaded one, boys. I'll tell you, I don't believe Lane is going to take another SEC job. I think Lane would listen, just like anybody would, to an NFL opportunity. I just don't see him leaving in conference. It creates too much bad blood, in my opinion.
At this point, I agree. If we were having this conversation 10 years ago, you could say that that you could do things at Florida that you can't do at Ole Miss. It's difficult to say that because the math has changed in college football. And Lane certainly, to use a Seinfeld term, has hand over everyone, the Ole Miss administration and the boosters. He's at a point where now where he has the equity. So if I need something, they'll go out and make it happen. At Florida, obviously he'd have influence there, but he doesn't have the equity that he's earned at Ole Miss. I did think it was interesting that I caught the post-game press conference. Someone asked him, about the atmosphere for the Florida game. And then Lane said, well, you must have not been here last week when they played the Citadel. I was kind of just like, huh, well, why bring that up if you're not trying to sow seeds for your exit? But you go to Florida, you go to LSU, you're going to spend a considerable amount of effort getting those programs to where Ole Miss is right this second.
Yeah, I mean, Zach, first of all, bless you for the Seinfeld reference. For once in my life, I want hand. I never have hand. That's the same point, though, that I've made on our podcast in recent weeks. It's like the landscape has so dramatically changed that while Florida is still a great job, it's not the job it was in 2020, let alone 2015, because not only has the math in college athletics changed, but the map has changed. And the map means you don't have to have a fertile recruiting base in your backyard. It helps. It's more conducive. It's easier to get some of those younger players committed, but you don't have to have that. Texas Tech does not have that. Ole Miss does not have that. It produces a nice amount of high school talent on a yearly basis, but Ole Miss's roster is not just loaded with 80% Magnolia State players. But I guess I would say for the first time in a few weeks, I put even odds on it. Like, I'm a straight coin flip on whether or not Lane Kiffin returns to Ole Miss next year. I don't necessarily think LSU is the destination there. Could it be the Miami Dolphins? He loves to fish. There's a lot of nice fishing right off Biscayne Bay. Could it be the Florida Gators? I think that Florida has been very persistent, and I think I know that Florida has been very persistent and trying to indicate to Lane in recent weeks exactly what it would do for him, exactly how many resources it would carve out for him, that he would have, quote-unquote, unlimited resources to build a roster, or virtually unlimited resources to build a roster. The New York Giants, I don't see Lane in New York. Maybe I'm just dead wrong about that, but I've got the odds dead even for the first time since all this started, because for many weeks I was of the belief that Lane absolutely would listen to everyone and stay in Oxford, because he just got his family, as Scott knows, he just got his whole family moved to Oxford, I want to say in August. So they're all there. They're one big happy family. His son's in school there. But I think the equation's changed a little bit.
Moving right along, Texas played Georgia, and it's not even the top three or four games we're talking about. Georgia just handled their business, and Texas still just doesn't look right. And Sark almost – he just didn't have that fire in him yesterday on the sidelines that I saw. It's like, all right, we're on to the next season. Zach, give me some thoughts.
Let's start with Georgia. This is going to be shocking, but I came away impressed by their 25-point victory. I was just in awe, along with the rest of the nation, in that offense and Mike Bobo's play calling. I mean, you saw him. ABC did a good job of capturing his just fire in those opening touchdowns, and he absolutely killed it. It feels like Georgia has three offenses in one. They can be a power run team when they really want to be. They can be a misdirection team and scheme open a wide open tight end when they want to be. And they could be a power spread RPO team when they want to be. And they have all the pieces. I mean, when I grow up, I want to be a Georgia tight end. It looks like the most fun thing to do in the world. And I can't say enough about Kirby Smart. I mean, when's the last time, I guess other than Alabama, they played a big game and didn't play harder than the other team and weren't more prepared than the other team. They won that game in all three phases, primarily the special teams. That the game was over when they recovered that onside kick, and Georgia knew it, Texas knew it. So, I'd love to see the type of effort it's going to take to beat them in the playoffs. Cause I don't think there's a whole lot of rosters out there that are capable of battling with them for 60 minutes. Cause you saw they opened the game, mowed down the Texas defense, Texas pulled within four, three state touchdown drives. Ball game. Like when they have to hit that hyperdrive, they hit it and they leave nearly everyone else in college football in the dust. Go ahead, John.
I was just going to say, I agree with a lot of that. I was going to say again, I don't know the tiebreakers. Shame on me. But if Georgia advances to the SEC championship, that would be who I would pick to win that game. But if it was against Texas A&M at 12-0, then I would think you're looking at two SEC teams getting byes in the opening round of it, regardless of the outcome of that game. That's how well Georgia is playing. After limping through Auburn, Florida, and Ole Miss by a combined 22 points, and the SEC had been touting how competitive it is all year and how there hadn't been any blowouts to speak of or anything like that, now all of a sudden Georgia has won its last two games, including on the road at Mississippi State, by a combined 76-31 or something like that. Like, they've produced blowouts at the right time of the season. They've got a money game against Tim Albin's rebuilding Charlotte program before that game in Mercedes Stadium against Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech, I'm sure we'll discuss in a moment. But Georgia looks like it's absolutely peaking at the perfect time. And there aren't many teams around college football right now that I think you can say that about.
And to your point, John, I mean, I don't think it's possible to play your absolute best game from an emotion and fire standpoint 17 times, 16 times from Labor Day weekend to the end of January. You have to pick your spots. And obviously, this is a game Georgia put everything it had into, because now they're going to go into a lull before Georgia Tech, and then from there, it's go time. And then as for Texas, I'm not going to pick them to beat A&M. I don't think it's that insane that they could beat A&M, but I don't think it matters in terms of playoff. I don't think they're going to make the college football playoff. I don't think they're one of the 12 best teams in college football. The Kentucky and Mississippi State miracles weren't, you know, those weren't magic, you know, saving dramatic moments in a magical story. They were stays of execution. And the odd thing is, your season started with everyone on your roster but your quarterback giving you a winning effort at Ohio State. And then on Saturday at Georgia, your quarterback was the only one on your team that gave you a winning effort. I mean, Arch Manning was, for points, one of the best players on the field in either uniform, and the rest of the team was not. So this team is regressing. The program's regressing. The offense does not have an all-SEC caliber player, I don't think, anywhere. At any position, there's not one all that conference player on the defense, maybe a couple, but again, when Georgia needed to score, they scored, and the special teams were a disaster. So,
all right, let's breeze a little bit through the Big Ten, because some of it's quite breezable. Ohio State just had their way with UCLA. UCLA's vaunted offense.
Yeah, UCLA playing a backup quarterback, but it wasn't going to matter yesterday.
Nope. Yeah, Indiana hosted Wisconsin. football game, handled, moved on. Yeah. USC had Iowa. An interesting game, rain back and forth. USC fought through and got a dub, which isn't always the USC way. It felt like Lincoln felt like that was a big game, big win. Some grit for his team.
Yeah, I thought it was significant. Really, the way that USC has had to win its last three games against Nebraska, coming back, Northwestern, a gritty, tough team that I'm sure we'll touch on in just a moment, but they really handled them last Friday night, and then Iowa coming off of an emotional game, looking to ruin USC's season after having Oregon kick a last-second field goal to squelch its own playoff hopes. I thought there was a lot of toughness. I thought there's more toughness in this USC team than we've seen in any that Lincoln Riley has fielded since 22. We outlined some of that, I think, on Football Scoop Friday in our feature about Danton Lynn that really focused on the toughness he plays with or played with and now coaches with and has made that coaching identity. And now USC gets to go to Oregon next week in an absolute playoff eliminator. It's a playoff game next week in Autzen Stadium, which is awesome because there's not a lot of great games on next weekend's slate.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That is the spotlight game of next weekend.
Excellent read on D-Lynn, too, on footballscoop.com. Good stuff by John Bryce. Bold prediction of Iowa, but we won't talk about that. Georgia Tech, let's shift gears.
I'm like 9 points.
ACC, Georgia Tech was playing maybe the worst team in college football. I'm not like Bill, don't tell me everybody's in a good mood over there. Anyway, and you're like, Georgia Tech, come on, boys. Hey, we got to win this game. Come on, boys. You're not Texas A&M. You can't just dangle them out there and then reel them back in. Well, they did. Haynes King is just a dude. I mean, what kind of award is Haynes King going to win? He deserves to win that award and more.
Yeah, I think Georgia Tech does not have the defensive personnel to play great football week in, week out. Let's just say that they got kind of run over at NC State. Boston College had a lot of success. They got that Georgia game to where if they win that one, they have a potential for maybe an at-large bid if they can't win the ACC for whatever reason. They're going to need to play darn near perfect football on offense, and Haynes King needs to give a Heisman effort in that one because Georgia's going to have its way with Georgia Tech defensively.
Yeah, and Georgia Tech can't even afford to look down the road at that Georgia game to close the season. First of all, 370 yards and a tutty yesterday from Haynes King. What award should he win? He should have won College Football's Toughest Man Award. I don't know which one you associate that with, but he is a splendidly fun college football quarterback to watch play. That game should not have ultimately come down to a field goal after Georgia Tech reeled off 17 consecutive points in the fourth quarter to take a 33-28 lead. That's when a really good team would have gotten a defensive stop and then been able to use its four-minute offense to finish out that game rather than having to kick a 23-yard field goal with 11 seconds left to secure the win. But let's not forget that they have to host Pitt Saturday night, and Pitt certainly did not look great against Notre Dame Saturday afternoon. But that's another – I mean, that one's ripe with ACC title implications. We already heard Pat Narduzzi, as Zach so chronicled so very well. Like, he didn't care if they lost 110-3 yesterday, which they almost did, because it only matters what Pitt does against Georgia Tech and against Miami to finish the season. Pitt didn't play a couple of key guys yesterday, so that Georgia Tech – Pitt game looms large. That's the only pathway for Georgia Tech to get an at-large bid, in my opinion, is to win that game next weekend and then be positioned to play in the ACC championship and then have Georgia and just have a great game with Georgia one way or the other.
Yeah. So let's stay in the ACC for a second because what Miami did to NC State is illegal in some states. Go to jail for that.
That's the Miami that I think everyone's been waiting to see on any sort of consistent basis. And now we'll see if Miami can do it on any kind of season closing consistent basis. The Hurricanes need a lot of help, but they're not impossibly out of the playoff picture. They're sitting there lurking at 15th. They're the highest ranked ACC team despite their two ACC losses. Again, there's a lot of complicated tiebreakers out there, but if Miami goes out and wins its final two, including at Pitt to end the season, then I think there's a scenario that the Canes could slide into the ACC championship game.
Yeah, it seems like Miami at its best is easily the best team in the ACC, but their own problem is they don't play at their best often enough to go out and prove that. So assuming they win at Pitt, it seems like it's pretty clear that the committee is going to say we're going to take a 10-2 Notre Dame over a 10-2 Miami, even though they played head-to-head, because we just flat out think Notre Dame is better than Miami, which is fair. I mean, Notre Dame is one of the 10 best teams in the country, but I think with Miami, you got to win out and make that an argument and say, hey, we're 10-2 as well. We beat these guys head-to-head. That should matter. And if they're the one team in the ACC that can get to the playoff and actually do something.
And yeah, flex. So, yeah, you got to do what you just did. Right.
Yes.
And they've got a roadie at Virginia Tech, and then they've got a roadie at Pitt to close it all out. And obviously Notre Dame just played Pitt yesterday. So you get the final Saturday of the regular season to make a similar or stronger statement. And we know Pat Narduzzi put some insane window dressing on that game yesterday, calling timeouts when it was 37-9 just to get his offense over 200 yards and to get that magical 15th point. I don't know what it means, but he got it. And so Miami's going to have an opportunity to go into the big catch-up bottle and try to produce a similar output.
Amen. All right, we're about 30 minutes in. Let's run a little bit quicker here. Utah went to Baylor and ran for like 7,000 yards, and that wasn't pretty at all. Doesn't feel great for Dave Aranda's future.
No, but Mac Rhodes is not there, and
I know.
What's the power structure there?
I don't know. And Mac Rhodes might not be there.
Yeah.
Yeah, but is the absence of authority the excuse for irresponsibility? I don't know. But that program does not look like it's trending in a very positive direction.
I was going to say you close at Arizona and then home against Houston. So you're underdogs in both those games.
Yeah. We talked about Haynes King being quite an awesome human and great story. How about Bear Bogmeyer? I mean, that dude, we get him for years to come. Wow. America needs to learn more about that guy. All right, Michigan went to Northwestern, found a way. JB, quick thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, the game in Wrigley Field, Michigan did just enough. I've told you guys that was a critical game for Michigan, for the Wolverines. They're staring down at Northwestern, at Maryland, and then hosting Ohio State on Senior Day, and there will be decided underdogs in only one of those three games. But again, there's just sort of been this lingering gray cloud hanging over this Michigan season. As it was put to me, we walk around this building feeling like we're 2-7 instead of 7-2 going into the game last week. They're now 8-2. They will go in as long as they handle business at Maryland, and Maryland is tanking. That's another one that should be addressed. They're terrible, but they do have some athletes. They do have some playmakers that if you bust a play, they can turn that into a touchdown that could be the difference in a game. But otherwise, they should go into the Ohio State game in the conversation to upset the number one team, finish 10-2, and then start the propaganda machine for why they should be a playoff team.
All right, we talked about some quarterbacks with some moxie, with some grit. How about Chandler Morris? Dude, I mean, respect on his name. Cavs are 9-2. I mean, handily beat Duke.
And I'm yet to have respect for his journey to get to where he is. I mean, he was taking backup reps from Spencer Rattler at Oklahoma in 2020, and then had TCU, North Texas, and then now to Virginia, and earning everything he got. I always felt bad for him because when Chad was the head coach at Arkansas, the Morris family stayed at Highland Park in Dallas, because obviously Chad was at SMU before that. And Arkansas fans were up in arms because Chad would fly back to watch Chandler play on Friday nights before coaching Arkansas. And obviously that did not go well for Chad Morris, that tenure. But I always felt like that put Chandler Morris in a really weird spot of kind of getting his dad in hot water, so to speak, in his profession. So you got to feel really good for the Morris family.
That's a great note. It didn't do well for his coaching tenure at Arkansas. It did well for his fatherhood.
Yeah.
Brent Brennan almost got run out of Arizona last year. He's come back and had some very, very nice wins. They're up 7 wins. At Cincy, that's a big one. You know, good for them.
That's a huge one. That was a dagger blow in some instances to the Big 12's quest to ensure that it has two playoff teams. It does not eliminate the Big 12's ability to have two playoff teams. But Cincinnati had debuted in the rankings this past week. It was just a two-loss team. It had only lost once in league play before yesterday. It had a neutral site, 4-point loss to a fully healthy, ranked Nebraska team at the time to start the season. That was a massive, massive win for Brent Brennan. The Wildcats clinched bowl eligibility a week ago. Now they're playing for a much better bowl. They get Baylor at home next week, as we've already discussed. That should be an 8th win. And then they'll roll in on Thanksgiving weekend, maybe the Friday night after Thanksgiving, into the Valley of the Sun with a massive rivalry contest against Kenny Dillingham's squad. So, yeah, Brent Brennan, after being on the hot seat a year ago, he doesn't have a lot of money tied up into his contract. You wonder how quickly Arizona might work to try and start stabilizing that, push him out a year or two, especially if he goes ahead and takes care of business and gets them to 8 wins next week, because they do still have some young talent and they don't have the most money to spend on NIL in the Big 12.
Yeah, with UCLA out there, we might have a little inside scoop on UCLA search coming up for you later today, friends who are listening. I went to the LSU-Arkansas game yesterday, Battle of the Interims. Frank Wilson, congratulations on a great win. A lot of the chatter amongst the halfway, maybe-ish full stands were, man, Bobby Petrino. Arkansas should have been winning that game like 28 in the first half. And all of a sudden, it's halftime and LSU's winning. And you're like, huh? What? It didn't make any sense. Arkansas just rudderless, disappointing for their fan base for sure. LSU, there was no one there at the end of the game, but the players are pretty excited. They're showing, they got some moxie. Nussmeier, you feel for the kid. Great kid, has done all the right things. Clearly something isn't right. Needs to get his body right. But LSU found
it. It's a big opportunity for Michael Van Buren to go out and put some tape out there to either be the guy at LSU or be the guy somewhere else next season.
Oh, one of the Van Buren boys.
Texas Tech just destroyed Central Florida. We're not going to talk about that. Notre Dame Pitt, we touched on that one. JB, anything else we need to say there?
No, I mean, I will not be at all surprised to continue to hear Marcus Freeman's name linked to the Giants job. There's some Notre Dame, New York Giants ties there. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't at all be surprised to see Marcus Freeman get an interview in that process down the road, especially because the NFL calendar does not operate with the same insane urgency as the collegiate calendar. But Notre Dame now a winner of 8 in a row, every single one of those 8 by 10-plus points. That game yesterday turned in literally 16 seconds of game time. Jeremiah Love uncorked a 54-yard touchdown run. The next play was a kickoff for a touchback. The next play was a Mason Mitchell pick six by Tay Johnson that he returned 49 yards for a touchdown. That was good morning, good afternoon, and good night, all in about 15 or 16 seconds of time. Notre Dame had scoring plays yesterday covering 54 yards, 49 yards, 25 yards, and then a 100-yard, 2-point interception conversion return.
Hey, there you go. How about a little respect on Brian Newberry's name? Navy head football coach. They're not going to win them all, but, dog, they're going to fight you. And that's a nice win over South Florida.
I think pound for pound, that might be – that along with what Oklahoma did at Alabama are probably my two most impressive teams of the weekend. Like Navy going and winning that game, or Navy being able to win that game, especially after what happened to the Middies last week here in South Bend against Notre Dame. What Newberry has done to turn that program around in such short order. You know, I saw them in Dublin, Ireland to open the 23 season, and they were just atrocious. And now they're tough. They fight you. They have a new offensive identity under Drew Cronic that's been really effective for them. That's a well-coached, dangerous football team that's a whole lot of fun to watch.
Well, and it's a bummer of a loss for South Florida because you have the best player in your conference in Byron Brown, and in my understanding, the highest NIL budget in your conference. And now you are on the outside looking in of getting into your conference championship game. You're in the top 25 and had the glide path to the playoff. And now you're going to need significant help from multiple teams to even get into the title game with the best roster in your conference.
John Summerall's team keeps winning. Memphis stubbed their toe again. Tulane. Okay.
Yeah. Real quick on that one, I caught the end of that one. It was a great scene at Dowdy Ficklin. And I mean, it seems like different programs in that conference, Navy, Tulane, certainly South Florida, Memphis, North Texas has gotten a lot of pub on this site. And East Carolina's hanging around there. They're 5-1 along with Tulane, North Texas, Navy's 6-1. So at some point today or tomorrow, I'm going to dive into the tiebreakers in all these leagues and see what needs to happen for everyone.
Yeah. Great American, Zach. We appreciate that.
Blake Harrell nailing down the permanent job with a few games to go last season after leading that turnaround once they parted with Mike Houston. Carried it over this year. His coordinators are really good. John David Baker running the offense. Joss Aldridge has been a very nice complimentary piece to Blake Harrell, the former defensive coordinator, now the head coach. Those three are doing some great things for East Carolina. And you're right. They're just there lurking right in the thick of the conference race.
All right. I'm going to breeze through a couple of these real fast. Marshall beats Georgia State. Georgia State is 1-9. Change is coming there. North Texas is 9-1, guys. Son, Eric Morse is ball coach. Zach, will Eric Morse still be North Texas's football coach next season?
I would be very surprised.
I agree. Moving right along. How about Coach Beard at Missouri State? 7 dubs on the season.
And climbing the fence last night to celebrate with the students. I don't know if you've seen that video yet.
Pretty awesome.
It's pretty remarkable stuff. Good for him. And they said they're going to petition the NCAA. We don't want to see 5-7 teams that get into it because they get into a bowl game because they technically have the right APR. Transitioning shouldn't be an automatic disqualifier. Yeah. It's harder to get a bowl bid in year one than year three. What is that about? Let them in. Let them in.
Amen. How about Eck? I mean, the whole country's picked up on Jason Eck, but 7 wins in New Mexico. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had an agent ask me the question, then I reached out to others. Hey, is anybody going to want the Michigan State job? They got all these sanctions and everything. And the resounding response was, oh, heck yeah. Michigan State is their anchor is lost. They're just drift. It's over.
Yeah.
New AD. They're making a change.
It seems highly unlikely that they would run it back there. It's just been a disastrous fit. I wish we had Doug on this morning because he has a great pulse. And East Lansing being up in Michigan, but glad he's getting some very much earned and deserved family time. But yeah, that's a really bad fit for whatever reason. And Michigan State went with that hire, unorthodox, outside of the family, so to speak, didn't hire some grungy defensive guy. They went and got the former quarterback in Jonathan Smith at Oregon State. And it's just been an absolute abject disaster. And then he inherited plenty of disaster in the process. There was a lot to fix in that program that Mel Tucker had left in tatters that did not show up necessarily just in wins and losses. So Jonathan Smith has done some good there, but it's off the field and in some of that stuff that only matters if you're also stacking wins.
My favorite note, I largely think vacating wins is a stupid punishment, but I will note that infamous September 1st, 2023 game, when Michigan State beat Central Michigan with Connor Stallions on the Chippewa sideline. Now both teams have been caught breaking NCAA rules in that game.
Ain't that something? The thing at Michigan State is you don't even hear the players sticking up for the coaching staff. So you're like, okay, moving right along to Maryland. Six straight losses. They still got Michigan. So we'll say seven straight losses, and then they finish versus Michigan State. Yeah. At that point, I don't think either team gets a win in that game. It's just a football game to happen.
Yeah, I mean, this season started basically with Maryland and Mike Loxley admitting that he didn't have the pulse of last year's team. He lost the locker room and said he'd put his office or his desk in the locker room if he had to. And hard to say that he's found the pulse of this team. This team doesn't seem to have a pulse to find.
That's a great way of putting it, Scott. I mean, Zach, this team doesn't seem to have a pulse. And it's not just six losses in a row. It's that the last three really haven't been competitive. The last three losses have been by 45 points, 15 points, and 18 points. So you're not only now stacking L's, you're stacking them in a non-competitive way, closing out your season after being a terrible disappointment a year ago and having a lousy season in which you finished with a five-game losing streak a year ago and lost seven of your last eight a year ago. So, again, when you do the temperature check or the vibe check or whatever, all the directional arrows are pointing down in College Park.
All right, we're 40 minutes in. I'm going to go a little faster. Middle Tennessee is 1-9. They lost to Western Kentucky. Western Kentucky does a good job. Middle. Flush it and start over, in my opinion. Nevada with a heck of a win over Kenny Niumatalolo's team. Kenny's team is now 3-7 on the season. Yeah. James Madison just Donkey Konged App State. I mean, just wasn't even polite.
You know, Dow Loggins, first-year head coach for the Mounts, had them 4-2 a few weeks ago. Couple of nice wins. Now all of a sudden they've lost four consecutive games. They're 4-6. They'll be hard pressed not to close with a losing record. And you know, that's another one. How is the fit there? How is the fit in the Appalachian Mountains with Dow Loggins and Boone, North Carolina? Starting to hear a little bit of chatter about that.
Agreed. I was surprised Texas State went in and whipped up on Southern Miss. In the Rock in Hattiesburg, huh?
Yeah, I didn't see a snap of this game, but if you told me one of those teams would win 41-14, I would have bet. I'd bet my house on Southern Miss. That was the most shocking result, pound for pound, of the weekend by far.
Tulane handled their business with FAU. Moving right along, I thought Bill Belichick did not put any respect on Jake Dickert. I don't know if y'all saw the closing handshake. It was a breeze by Belichick. Mm-hmm. Dickert's like, bro, come on. So, you know, we played.
I mean, he's the oldest coach in college football and continually can act like the biggest baby in the sport when things aren't going his way.
I don't really have any idea what's happened with Liberty's season, but Liberty's just not a real great football team this year. And I don't know. I have absolutely no idea why. That's my entire rant right there.
Yeah, well, they lost Caden Salter, the quarterback, to Colorado in the offseason, and Jamie Chadwell has really struggled. But if I'm not mistaken, Liberty faltered a little bit down the stretch last year, even with Salter still on the roster, and it's carried over into this year. Obviously, Jamie Chadwell will be back next year, but next year now becomes a bit of a referendum season for him and the Flames.
Speaking of surprises, I was surprised Sam Houston. It was a home game, but I was surprised they beat Delaware. Delaware's been pretty good this season, 5-5 now. But Sam got their second win of the season. Congratulations to those guys. Hard fought for them. Missouri had Mississippi State. I know we thought that one might be a little closer than it was. Ahmad Hardy just changed the game, ripping off a couple of those ones. Jacksonville State, y'all. Charles Clark is a football coach.
Charles Kelly.
Charles Kelly, I apologize, yeah.
Yeah, and my guy Clint Trickett, man, he's an underrated offensive coordinator. They've got Taylor Housewright on that offensive staff as well, who called plays during Montana State's earlier FCS run and then had been on staff at Georgia Southern, came over and joined Jack State. Charles Kelly has a nice, nice staff put together there at Jack State. That one surprised me a little bit, though, because Jerry Mack and the Owls had been playing as well as certainly anybody in CUSA and really as well as anybody in this region of the country.
Yeah. All right, let's finish it up. Two fascinating games. San Diego State in the rain handled Boise State fairly well. San Diego State has 8 dubs. John Bryce told us before the season they were going to go over, and they have gone over. Nice call, JB.
Thank you, thank you. Yeah, Jaden Donegal, the Michigan quarterback, they hardly had any passing yards. I stayed up foolishly late watching that game last night because I just got invested to see, because it was 14-7 forever, and there was never enough separation where you felt this game's over one way or the other. And then they got a late field goal and made it 17-7. And then Boise still drove down and had a chance for a field goal that would have made it 17-10 with a minute to go and an onside kick in the offing. But the kick missed badly, and San Diego State won. Sean Lewis, you alluded to that UCLA intel piece coming. I would expect Sean Lewis's name to be in that UCLA intel piece.
San Diego State has allowed 51 points total in their 8 wins, including, I believe, 3 shutouts.
So, nice. Fresno State, Matt Ince, first year's head coach. Ince was the head coach at North Dakota State, wins national championships there, goes to USC as the linebackers coach, assistant head coach for Lincoln Riley, and then left that to go be first-time head coach. And the guy bet on himself, stepping down to USC is a big step down from North Dakota State. But, yeah, you leave a head coaching gig, you'll become a linebackers coach. Now you're back up, and you're 1-7 dubs. That's I'm proud of that guy.
No, it's been a great year for Fresno. And, they'd had a tough row of things, and Tim Skipper nearly got that job permanently. They elected to go with Ince, and he's delivered in a major way in year one.
It's increasingly clear that it seems like the path for stardom and coaching is divisional head coaching job. It's just you got to bet on yourself at some point and take a step down to take a bigger step forward.
All right, my last takeaway of the weekend, and then I'll hand it off if you guys have any closing thoughts. Clemson was at Louisville, national TV Friday night. A lot of eyes on Louisville because of Jeff Brohm's. He's involved. Louisville would like to lock him up, but they haven't offered a massive number. He's on the radar. Penn State, Florida, a couple other things. And what I saw out of Louisville, this is most I've watched Louisville all season, was that game, is an undisciplined team who lost the game with their unsportsmanlike penalties after the play, some poor decisions. And you see Jeff Brohm is an incredible competitor, and he's really football high IQ. But his teams do this a little bit too often, and I'm like, gosh. I think even the quarterback came out after the game and said, hey, that's a culture thing, and it's something we got to change this offseason. He's like, those stupid penalties, it's our locker room, and we got to change it going forward. When your quarterback comes out saying that, that's a red flag for me.
Yeah, and I think Clemson put the ball on the turf near the goal line like 3 different times and never really paid a price for that. And that was a wild game. I've slept since. I don't have the details in front of me. But, yeah, I agree with you. It was a game that Louisville lost more than Clemson won.
All right, gentlemen, any closing thoughts anywhere?
Some FCS notes I want to drop real quickly here, some shouts out. Mike Willis and Marist won their 5th game yesterday. They hammered Davidson 37-10. That's the most wins for the Marist program in a half decade. Willis, the former Princeton OC, continues to do really good things there. Color me stunned. Mike Jacobs has Mercer 9-1, and they absolutely woodshedded Chattanooga yesterday. That guy is a flat-out ball coach. We know he's been a person of interest in the UAB search, among others. Mercer, enjoy him while you can. We're not trying to run him off, but the guy is a great ball coach. He's got those Midwest Ohio State roots, and he's going to do great things for your program, and then he's going to be an FBS head coach, very similar to Brent Vegan, what he has done for Montana State. They absolutely had another powerful win last night. And then those are kind of the main ones for me. Bobby Wilder, they hung tough. Tennessee Tech did. Deep into the game against Kentucky before losing 42-10. Hopefully they got nobody hurt, because that's a Tennessee Tech team that can and should make a lot of noise in the FCS playoffs.
For me, we covered every game I intended to cover. This is when Scott's the QB one of this thing, it is a high octane, no huddle tempo offense.
You didn't want to go deep into the Kansas State Oklahoma State matchup?
14-6 barn burner.
All gas, no brakes. Last thing I'll say is Austin Peay with a 30-16 win, their seventh win under second year head coach Jeff Ferris. Of course, they have that early season scalp from beating MTSU, that FCS, FBS move up component. So that was a big win for them. They get Tarleton State on the road. That's probably going to determine an FCS playoff berth there. So a lot of good things happening there.
If you guys are still with us 50 minutes into this podcast, God bless you. You are a great American. I'll close this out by saying Division II, Division III NAIA finished their regular season last night. Playoff announcements coming this evening. We'll be here to cover it all. We look forward to cheering you guys on as you progress through the playoffs, heading towards the national championship for a couple of great teams out there. It's a tough time for some with its turnover, right? It creates new opportunity. God has a great path for you. Just keep walking with him and stay good. Football Scoop Podcast. Everybody have a great Sunday. We'll talk soon.